Do you like what we do? Well, let me introduce you to Friends of NEAR. This is a way for you to support the great work of NEAR Media Co-op, which we here at NEAR think will give friends and family the chance to actively support the community media work we just love doing. Joining is easy, and you can find out more at near.ie/friends or by email to friends@near.ie. There's a few T's and C's, but only a few. Promise. Go on. Let's be friends.
And welcome back to the second part of Northside Today here on NEAR FM. Later on, I'll be talking to Liam Challoner, and he's with the National Anti-Bullying Research and Resource Centre in DCU. But in studio now, I have, of course, Cormac Moore, historian in residence with the Dublin City Libraries North Central area. Hello, Cormac. How are
Hello,
you?
Noel. Good. Good, thank you.
Okay, this has been in the news quite recently as well. It's hard to imagine an incident being so significant, but tell us about it and why it's so significant.
Yes, so 2 weeks ago we spoke about the meeting of the First All, which was on the 21st of January 1919. And on the very same day, about 2 hours beforehand, and by coincidence, what were considered, and still are by many people considered, the first shots of the War of Independence happened that very same day in a small little outlet about 80 miles from Tipperary town called Solihull-Beag. What happened there was that two RIC officers, the Royal Irish Constabulary was the police force in Ireland at the time, two RIC officers were killed, were ambushed and killed. They were carrying a case of gelignite, and they were ambushed by eight Irish volunteers, which became the IRA, mm-hmm. during the War of Independence, were ambushed by them and killed. It has been considered the opening shots. Now, there were incidents before that. You know, the violence didn't just stop from 1916 to January 21st, 1919. There were some incidents, there were some deaths. But this is considered really with the kind of the opening shots of the War of Independence. You also could argue that not a whole lot happened afterwards for almost a year. The war really ratcheted up to its brutality in 1920. Mm-hmm. 1919 was very much a defensive war, and it was getting arms and attacking barracks. There were deaths, but not as many as there would be the following year.
Did this idea of the two policemen carrying the ammunition, I mean, two doesn't say many. Were they attacked regularly for ammunition, when they were transporting it?
After that would become a common feature of the early kind of salvos of the war. This ambush had been kind of planned for days, weeks beforehand. In fact, they had been the IRA or the Irish Volunteers men, so Seamus Robinson, Sean Tracy, Dan Breen, they were all had been waiting from the 16th of January every day for this consignment of arms. And they actually had one of their party, Patrick O'Dwyer, he was the bicycle scout. So what he would do would actually check the barracks, see when they're leaving, see which route they're going. There's two routes they would take to go to the quarry, and so he was able, and it's about 2 hours walk. So they were on a horse and cart, and there was two councilmen with them, the two RAC men. So basically, he was on the bike. He saw them leaving. He knew the route they were taking, and he was able to get back to the his ambush band. And tell them they're on their way here. Wait, so that, and it was actually 24th of January when they were able to strike. It was planned. It was the debate that still goes on and will never be answered, I'd imagine, is that they did deliberately want to kill them, or were they just trying to get the actual the gelignite? And that is open for debate. Mm-hmm. Now, actually, there's a very good video on the Irish Times. Ronan McGreevy did it on the Solihull-Beag ambush. And Seamus Robinson's daughter, who spoke for the... Seamus Robinson was the actual leader of the party. He's probably not as well known as Sean Tracy or Dan Breen, but Seamus Robinson was the leader of this party. And he told her, he's dead obviously, but he told her that it was actually what they weren't meant to be killed. That's just the way it happened as the events transpired. However, Dan Breen and Sean Tracy always said, we have to kill someone to start a war. And the people in the Dáil or Sinn Féin leaders, they're not going to start a war. We have to kill someone. And Dan Breen even said his only disappointment was not that they killed two people, but that they didn't kill more. Wow. He wanted six people, RIC officers there. So that would make a much bigger statement than the two did.
Well, the forensics that I'm reading about here seems to indicate that they were deliberately killed. So you don't know how great forensics were at that particular time. But even though the word coincidence is used with the first doll and all that, do you think it was?
Absolutely. No. I can't see any evidence to suggest otherwise.
Okay.
Because the doll was against the move, and the doll definitely did not sanction that. Sinn Féin leadership did not sanction that. In fact, Richard Mulcahy, who became the Provisional Minister for Defence, he condemned the killings and said, we need to get people on board, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And even Cathal Brugh, who was a man who... had the previous year suggested killing the whole British cabinet.
They felt probably that they had a foothold in politics and that was the way to go.
Yeah, then. And they were trying, because the whole theatre of the First Dáil, that was for an international audience too, and they were trying to get acceptance through the peace conference. That didn't work, but they were trying that route, and they didn't want to start a war until that avenue was tried. Now, if you look at the Sinn Féin election manifesto, it was a little bit ambiguous as to its stance on violence. Now, it did actually say that wanted to remove the power of England by whatever means possible available. So that would suggest that it was open to violence, and of course it was, and ultimately it did end up condoning the actions of the Irish Volunteers in Salhaid Beag and what the IRA and the Irish Volunteers did, but not at that time. And so it was a coincidence, and also you could argue that obviously the Irish Volunteers knew that there was going to be a First Dáil meeting that day because it was well publicised, but they had planned this days beforehand and would have ambushed the RIC men if they had come by that quarry another time. So I do think it was definitely a coincidence.
Okay. The Gelignite, that time I'd seen something on TV about it was used to explosions in quarries, yeah. You mentioned there a few times.
Exactly, yeah.
The two guys that were involved in it on the IRA, were they anyway prominent in the organisation or just two footmen?
They became prominent. One of the main leaders, Michael Collins, he took them under his wing in Dublin because they were on the road to that, and there was a big manhunt for them in Tipperary. There was £1,000 reward for Dan Breen. So they became very famous after that, or infamous, whatever word you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
And they did get involved in Dublin. Like Sean Tracy actually died in an incident in Dublin as part of the War of Independence. Dan Breen lived for many years and actually wrote a book, 1924, My Fight for Irish Freedom, this incident became known as the first shots of the War of Independence,
mm-hmm.
after his book in 1924, My Fight for Irish Freedom. But they were part of Flying Column. You could say they were one of the first kind of people who instigated the concept of guerrilla warfare. It was a very new and novel concept,
mm-hmm.
of ambushes and coming in, hiding and then going back into hiding, and striking. And that was a template that was followed by many revolutions later on in the century, mm-hmm. all over the world.
Okay, yeah, that's what Collins used, of course. He was supposed to be, the spearhead for guerrilla warfare.
Well, it would have been started in Salhaid Beag, really. That was kind of the template that was used by other flying columns and other elements of
And why do you think it took a year then for the impact to come out to an extent? You said a few things happened within the year.
Yeah.
And why
yeah.
did it still hold that significance that particular day? Was it because of the first day of the Dáil, or...
Yeah, well, it was also because they didn't have the full support of many Irish people. And, it was, as I said, it was very defensive, first of all, and the RIC were the main targets. Now, much has been said about the victims, the two RIC men. They were both Irish, they were both Catholic. James MacDonald, he was from Mayo. He was a widower with, I think, six or seven children. He was a fluent Irish speaker. The other was from Cork, Patrick O'Connell. He was 20. He was he was engaged to be married. These were well liked people, and there was revulsion by a lot of quarters, including from the nationalist community, that mm-hmm. they were killed. Now others said, look, they're RIC. They're actually symbols of British authority in Ireland, and the RIC were deeply unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
That continued throughout the year. The actual Dáil boycotted the police, and so the Dublin Metropolitan Police and the RIC in April 1919, not too long after after Salhaid Beag. But first of all, it was trying to win over the hearts and minds of the Irish people, and as is their wont and as their history, the British contrive to bring people over towards the Irish Volunteers. For example, in March, one of the most successful arms raids was Collinstown Aerodrome, which is present day site of Dublin Airport. The actual Irish Volunteers took a lot of ammunition and guns. And what did the British do? They actually fired all of the staff, about 2,000 from Collins. So the locals go, we weren't involved in that, but yet you're punishing us. And that would continue throughout the year. And it escalated in August, September, when the Chief Secretary, Ian McPherson, he actually banned organisations. He banned the Gaelic League. He banned Cumann na mBan. He banned the Irish Volunteers. And then he banned the Dáil. And that's when the two started really coming together. The Dáil, the political front of the movement, started agreeing and coming together with the military front. Okay. And also the military front had to swear an oath to the Dáil. That was very crucial as well. So that's when the conflict started to escalate. It's the British response and the increasing support for the actions of the Irish Volunteers. And then, of course, 1920, you had the introduction of the Black and Tans and the auxiliaries, where you know the Irish Volunteers restarted to gather momentum in terms of support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does when you think about it. I think a lot of people, when they talk about Black and Tans and that, they always associate that with 1916. I don't know why that mix-up always seems to come in.
Yeah, I don't know why either. Yeah, but the Black and Tans were
6 years, 7 years later.
Exactly, they were only introduced first of all in 1920.
Now I have heard when I was much younger in old days when you'd hear people talking about 16 and all like that. Yeah, the first thing that comes in, them Black and Tans are bastards. Yeah.
The whole War of Independence is called the Tan War by many people. And they were first introduced. Like they were a lot of them were soldiers just back from the war, had no employment. They were mercenaries basically, and they were brought in by the British and not well trained in many cases. And the auxiliaries, who probably don't have as bad a reputation in terms of name wise as the Black and Tans, but in many ways they were worse and more brutal than the Black and Tans. So
A lot of the Irish men and that involved in them as well, as you said there yourself. Of course, being at 100 years now, there's talk about centenaries and exalting the men in a much more open way. There's sort of mixed views on that as well. Getting much momentum, really, is it?
I don't have not as much as the Dáil. I think that's fair enough. I think the meeting of the first Dáil is probably our independence day. To me, that was what was achieved there. And not just that meeting itself, but the subsequent kind of actions by the administrative side of the opposition to Britain. Developing a counter state, developing their own courts, developing their own police, developing really taking on local government, actually creating a counter government to the British state was an extraordinary achievement. That is still a template of our parliamentary democracy. So I think the first Dáil deserves to take precedence of those two incidents.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I thought there was a lot on Solihull-Beag, to be honest, as well. The government, like the Minister for Culture, Josefa Madigan, was there in Solihull-Beag. The President was invited. He didn't go. He spoke at the first Dáil instead. There was some criticism of that. And of course, the fact that actually a local historian I heard say that the fact that the two victims were Catholics and Irishmen, it could have been they could have been the ones ambushing, and the ones who ambushed could have been the RAC men. If it was different circumstances, there were many Catholics.
There's still a bit of a rift there of who to celebrate, and
Let's commemorate. Maybe not celebrate, but commemorate. Yeah. Like the World War One. Like I gave a talk on the first Dáil on Monday, in Raheny Library, and it extended into a debate on World War One and should we commemorate, should we glorify, should we celebrate? And it still does bring up a lot of different viewpoints and quite heated viewpoints as well. And it's the same with Solihull-Beag as well. Like, was it murder or was it a war? That is different. People have different views on that, of course.
I don't think that's ever going to change the views. Really, that people will always be different.
Of course, I do think though what is important, that whatever views we have, I think we need to try and put ourselves into the shoes of the people at the time and put it into their context. Mm-hmm. Because if we just put it into our context and our views of murder or violence or war, that's not fair to their legacy either. Because viewpoints were very different back then 100 years ago than they are now.
and the importance of what they were doing was different to what
exactly,
as
yeah. And like, obviously, is the argument that, and a very strong argument that and Sinn Féin had won a huge mandate just only a month beforehand by the Irish people, had voted in overwhelming numbers that they wanted an independent republic, which was completely ignored by the British, and many believed that the only way of doing something about it was to fight them, you know, to get them out of the country. So, you know, it's absolutely a legitimate stance to say that this was an act of war.
It'll probably always
against a foreign power.
I suppose the Carmichael Law always leave the question as well, though, would we have gotten where we are politically if that hadn't have happened? You know, that career.
And of course, that's going to keep on coming up over the next 2 years. Yeah. We do know that the two kind of moves by, say, Sinn Féin / Irish Volunteers was they had a military campaign and they had a civil disobedience campaign through, you know, creating their own Dáil and so on. And both of those together brought the British to the negotiating table in 1921. Now, we would have got a Home Rule under the Government of Ireland Act, but that was very limited powers. We got offered complete dominion status and we were able to achieve full independence.
Mm-hmm.
That probably would not have happened if both the civil disobedience and the military campaigns by Sinn Féin and the Irish Volunteers hadn't happened. So I would be of a view that we did achieve more independence because of the war that the Irish Volunteers instigated, and by the meeting of the First Dáil and all of those events.
Okay, interesting. Always interesting the debates that can happen of things like that. So it'll probably continue to go on and on and on. Have you any more talks coming up?
Well, tonight I'm giving a talk in the Good Counsel GA Club. And actually there's four of us speaking at that. So I'm going to be talking about the GA and the War of Independence. There's going to be Liz Gillis at it and my colleague Catherine Scuffle and John Dorney. So four of us will be talking from 8 o'clock at the Good Counsel GA Club.
Where is that?
I have the full address now. I'll be putting it on Google Maps, but it's somewhere close by here. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Just
search on Google Maps where exactly
Good
it is.
Counsel Club. Anyway, always a pleasure. I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time again, Cormac.
See you in all. Thank you.
Thanks very much.